First of all, I need to say this study was approved by our quality assurance and was funded by CDC, so I think we're conflicted here. And I need to thank my colleagues, at least one of whom is in the audience, because this is certainly a collaborative agreement, as well as our project officer from CDC. Well, clearly there is the problem that we have, if this, I don't really need to say anything to this audience, where influenza causes 36,000 deaths annually on average, and clearly this last year, or this current season actually, as it's still with us, has been one of those harder years. With hospitals and healthcare centers are places where influenza can be spread and spread easily, putting patients at risk, putting colleagues at risk, and also leaving a burden of absenteeism, which can leave clinics and hospitals unstaffed and unable to handle the burden as there's a surge of cases. So in the response to these problems, the ACIP made a number of recommendations, including vaccination annually, a number of steps they wanted hospitals and entities to put into place, including maximizing approaches and making them convenient, free. However, only 33%, which was 2 years ago, or last year, according to the NHIS, 42% of healthcare workers have been vaccinated. And so we still have a long way to go. None of us would certainly want to be graded on a traditional test when our score is 42%. So what's the barriers? Well, inconvenience is clear. If you're a busy clinician or nurse on a unit and you have a patient who's hanging on to life and you're trying to get them through an emergency, running to get a influenza vaccine, or for that matter, any vaccine off the unit, is just an issue of feasibility that's difficult. A number of people have fear of needles or side effects, or still hold on to the assumption that influenza causes, a vaccine causes flu, and of course they're thinking about that with the inactivated vaccine, not thinking about it with the live. And there's a low belief about the severity of influenza. As well, it was belief that healthcare workers, oh, we're strong, we're not really at risk. And obviously the issues, if they have to pay for it, for cost. Our institution had a number of previous efforts, from free vaccinations, peer vaccinations, where we sent some vials to the unit so the nurses could vaccinate each other, flyers, in-house publications, including our electronic ones, and mass clinics held often near places where people would eat so they could come and be vaccinated. We moved, thanks again to CDC's funding, to survey six of our hospitals and to find out what were the people saying. And we looked at the beliefs of those who were vaccinated and those who reported being unvaccinated. And we found that the most frequently cited reason to be vaccinated, and this surprised us. Here I was, you know, my bioethics hat on, waiting for altruism to protect the patient. But that's not what they said. They said the most common reason that they gave us was to protect themselves. We took this as a hint that, hey, we need to address in our education and promotions that this is what they're saying, and we need to reflect that. The incentive, well, it wasn't a whole list of things. It wasn't what I might have guessed. It was convenience was the greatest incentive. And the reason that people weren't doing it, according to what they said, it was a lack of priority. So we used these findings to help us plan both our publicity campaign as well as some of the particular outreaches. Now, this time, our medical center is probably centers what it should be, 43,000 employees, 19 hospitals spread over western Pennsylvania, 167,000 annual admissions, 3 million outpatient visits. So it's a large and diverse, from inner city psychiatric hospital to rural hospitals, children's hospital, specialty hospitals, there's a wide variety. So we, of course, did publicity, as everyone does. Posters, using our InfoNet, using the extra newsletter that's from our institution, we continued the peer vaccination. We fed back information to the business unit leaders. I know we're a hospital that's a nonprofit, but you know, it's the modern age. We have business unit leaders. We fed that information back to them about what the vaccination rates were in their units. We went ahead and sent, though, some other things, carts to the units. These were staffed by an EMT, and the EMTs were fairly assertive in saying, if you had your flu shot, and going right to them. Because again, convenience from our survey was the greatest reported issue, and so we went to the units. and it gave that. Other places used incentives, and the incentives varied by institution. One of the incentives that we used was a $10 one in 10 chance of getting a gift card to a local supermarket. We had food at some of them. Two of the institutions said, we'll give a lottery for a couple days of paid time off. That was a popular one. And one unit had a pizza party for one hospital for the unit on that hospital that had the highest vaccination rates. Now, we did this, not every institution didn't pick all of these, but instead we used a 2x2 factorial design. So imagine four quadrants, and you've got yes, 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 no, no, yes, and no, no. So there's four quadrants. I don't have a pointer that I see here, but as you can see, the three hospitals in the far corner, they got both. The two hospitals in the lower corner got neither, and the other ones got one, either the carts or the incentives. So we attempted to look, even though these institutions are very diverse, we attempted to look at what is the impact if you do two things or one thing. I also need to say that some of these hospitals are single hospitals. Other of these, because of the particular things, are actually two hospitals that we have, for the simplicity here, are sister hospitals. They may be located next door to each other, and we have presented them as one for simplicity's sake. Our database is the Occupational Health Manager data. It's a software package used by occupational medicine, and is populated with human resources data. As you're familiar with HR databases, they often use PeopleSoft, so this is your standard HR, and so it feeds and populates the demographic information. And so we have all of our employees in OHM. It's basically a complete transfer. The vaccines were given and recorded in the Occupational Health Database in 2005 and 6. And in addition, for the 2006, we went to the primary insurer and were able to get claims for flu vaccines for the employees and added that data so that we could make our database more robust. Statistical analysis, because these are clustered, we have to do them with a clustered analysis within the hospitals, used SAS and Sudan. The results in our hospitalized employees, our hospital-based employees, which there's 26,000 and almost 500, our rates pre-intervention were 32% and post 40%, which was statistically significant. Rates by hospital, it's fascinating when you look at these, and you see that rates go up generally. And if you look at incentives and carts, you'll see for the first hospital, it goes from 31 to 38%, so a 7% increase. You'll also find that things don't always go, incentives, no carts. One hospital went from 52% to 55 there. Carts, no incentive. We see the hospital 10 there went from 30 to 35. And given the publicity and attention to the business units, we also find that there's increases even in hospital 2, which 36 to 38, where there's no carts and no incentives. So the baseline does change. But you get the sense that there's more. Of course, there has to be one hospital, hospital 6, that doesn't follow the rules, that according to our database went down. So in that hospital, if you give incentives, your vaccination rates get worse. We suspect that there's a little migration, and we were a little puzzled by one hospital going down in rates, but the data are what they are. They're the best we can give. And so I don't know if there is underreporting or what happens. Degree of patient contact is one way we stratified our analysis, because we have people that are on the units that are nurses or therapists that are directly taking care of patients. We also have people who do indirect or passing or partial patient contact. This might be a engineer that's in the room briefly to make some adjustment, so could transmit influenza, a respiratory transmitted virus, but isn't taking care of the patient and doing blood pressures and drawing blood isn't face-to-face, but is transient. And then there's people in administrative offices or in the basements of the hospitals that have no contact whatsoever. So we attempted to stratify because we wanted to know what happened. And in these groups, all of them go up, and you can see the results there, going up about 8%. We also then wanted to stratify our analysis by... We have this factorial design, and we have patients, we have workers that are in those three different categories. So this is now a stratified analysis. We're going to look first at direct patient care, and you see both, and I'm going to have you go to the very far column where you see the difference column. And so from 31 to 41, we have a 10% statistically significant increase in rates if you do both in direct patient workers. If you do incentives, up 7%. If you do carts, up 9%. If you have did not use either, those just in the publicity arm went up about 3%. So we think this is important because you get an idea that incentives are not as important for healthcare workers as is the issue of the carts, that the healthcare workers have trouble getting to these mass clinics. It's convenience that makes a difference. That's where you get your biggest difference. And that's one of the things we see from this for direct. But now if we go to the indirect, this partial patient contact, they're in the room briefly, but they really aren't drawing blood or taking care of the patient. There, you see incentives jumps out. That's where you get your 10% rate, from 32 to 43. And you don't get as much if you do both or if you do the carts. And again, the control also went up. And then the administrative category, incentives. Here you get a 12% increase. But just to confound us and to make us scratch our heads, those who didn't get either went up 8%. So they must have really been influenced by their business unit leaders or something. We can't have to speculate on that. But again, we see these differences depending on what job category it is. And I think that's one of the important points I want to leave with you. So we put this into a regression analysis. And in our paper, we do it several different ways. We put it into a regression analysis with healthcare workers, with indirect, and with overall, and with just the administrative people. For the sake of time, since this was an audience trying to reach healthcare workers, I thought I would bring this to your attention with the healthcare workers. So here we attempt to control things. We put them into a statistical model that allows us to adjust for a variety of things and to see what predicts vaccination. 50 years of age and older, no surprise there. Whites, and we were disappointed that there was a racial difference found, but that's what the data suggested. A slight change if you're in a community hospital versus a non-community hospital. I will say that the non-community hospitals tend to be very large. The community hospitals tend to be smaller, and so there could easily be a size issue there. Intervention year makes sense. Go over the baseline. The intervention. Now, the higher the odds ratio, the stronger the effect. And here in the healthcare workers, you see it's the both the incentives and the carts gives you your highest. And the others do increase. You do see with the incentives, no carts, and carts, no incentives. And you'll see, again, that you get the sense that because of the highest odds ratios, the 1.63 and the 1.47 are occurring when carts are used. And so it appears once again in this more sophisticated analysis that carts do something for direct patient care workers. So multimodal interventions, including incentives, increase rates. You need to look at the job categories as a variable in planning your incentives and programs. Specific interventions will work better within different groups, we believe. Incentives superior when applied to those with, direct patient contact. Indirect patient contact. Mobile carts are the most effective for healthcare workers with direct patient contact. Recommendations, think about convenience, use meaningful incentives, think about your education programs to address what the needs are of your audience, including the publicity. Of course, free vaccine helps. Using a variety of times and delivery systems because people come in on different shifts, and we think accountability may make a difference. So what's next? Well, nationally mandatory vaccination of healthcare workers is certainly being talked about. There are a number of issues dealing with issues of autonomy and unions and others that have to be worked out. Declination statements are being used in a number of centers. Mandatory reporting is what's probably next for us. And we are now, for at least one unit, doing required training with a test on vaccination status, and it's part of the safety training. So as you learn about how to use a fire, it's an online course, as you learn how to use a fire extinguisher or what kind of fire extinguisher to use for what class fire, this is added in there. Strengths, this has got a factorial design. We use multiple diverse hospitals and a common electronic registry limitations. There's clearly crossover when you have hospitals that are in the vicinity and people who work potentially in two or three hospitals, they may cross over. And we don't have record of vaccinations that healthcare has received at non-traditional providers, or if they were also worked in a clinic where they could just get one of them dose allocated for patient care, they may have not turned that information in to employee health. So many healthcare workers do work while sick, thusly exposing patients and colleagues. And then we point out to a JAMA article that in one season, a quarter of the healthcare workers had serologic evidence of influenza infection, but most could not recall being sick, suggesting that asymptomatic but contagious influenza may have been occurring. And it is a major health safety issue. There are a couple trials in long-term healthcare facilities that found that vaccination of healthcare workers decreased patient fatalities. We'd love to see more studies to confirm that. Of course, it is considered now a measure of patient safety, the ethical imperative of do no harm, of non-maleficence, that is. And influenza vaccination is now called the next battleground for patient safety. So raising rates can be through appropriate interventions. We suggest that mobile carts and incentives are part of that, but should be stratified by type of worker. Let me move on.
That was excellent. I think we'll just pause for a moment and take a few questions from the audience before we get into the next one. Okay, right over here.
So, a great question. The question was, how do you measure direct versus indirect? That was a complicated issue. We went through the job categories and attempted to classify. One of my colleagues spent many hours, looking over those, attempting to look at which ones specified and talking to people knowledgeable about those jobs, which are ones that were more administrative, not based in the hospital, which were or based in a basement or some other, which were ones that were clearly patient-related. You know, nurse on the unit, you know, it's pretty obvious, but it was through a manual looking at the job listing and back and forth between employee health.
Because certainly, even the registration clerks are very close to the patient, and influenza is their one. So, you know, there are some people who are being those 15 or 5 people who are prescribed for the office of the patient. So, I mean, it's really complicated. I think it needs to be clarified.
Just for the tape, we're taping this, so I'm going to just sort of ask people to come to the microphone for your questions and comments. That's okay. I'll just summarize her question is a good one, and how do you classify direct patient care providers such as admitting clerks or unit coordinators who have close contact within 3 feet but not necessarily hands-on. It is one of those challenges. It'd be nice to have some standardization.
I think that's a little bit of a place by place is job code. What we learned from these different hospitals is the job codes, even within our own UPM system, these are hospitals that were formerly autonomous. And so they have very different job categories in some cases and classifications. And so you really have to have a hands-on or feet on the ground kind of perspective to get some sense of what it is in that locale. Sir.
We'll take this next group who's standing, and then we'll move to our next session.
Actually, I have a quick question. Despite your extensive effort in education and outreach and addressing convenience factors, you still were only able to get the maximum amount or the average participation up to more or less national norms, except for that one hospital, which had almost 55%. And so I would wonder if you could just share with us any unique characteristics of that hospital or what they actually did that might be sort of educational for us.
Well, I guess the first comment, the NHIS data, which give you the kind of national perspectives, are self-report. And what's the truth on what a vaccination rate is? Well, I think the truth is that it is a hard thing to quite measure because there are people who will not fill out a survey. And so you tend to have those less prevention-oriented who won't. And so actually, what's our national vaccination rates? It's a great question because we really don't know. We have what people have told us. We know that those more likely to, and this would be from our own survey, we would say, we know that those, actually the rates are much higher in our survey than they are in our occupational medicine database. And what we think is, we don't think our database, we think it's off a percent or two, but what we really think is difference is that those who respond to a survey are much more prevention oriented. So I wish we knew what the rates were. Regarding the one hospital, there are some hospitals that are smaller and where the employee health nurse knows every patient in the hospital. And when you have that kind of a situation, it's, Jim, it's time for your flu shot, and I've got it. And that's a very different dynamic than a hospital with 3,000 employees where there's no way there's that kind of relationship. Right. Dr. Strickus.
Ray Strickus, National Vaccine Program Office. Rick, why didn't you use declination forms?
That's a great question. Declination forms were stopped by our human resources. One of our hospitals is unionized, and the HR people are very reticent about workers' rights and union-type conflict. There's a number of us pushing, and as we can feed data back about where we're at, I think we have the chance to make changes. But there's substantial concern in a situation of nursing shortage and a concern with unions that if we don't want to drive employees away and end up in litigation unnecessarily. So it's a sensitive area.
My comment is somewhat of a follow-up of the second questioner who mentioned that the numbers didn't seem to go up very much, and if we go on year by year by that, it'll be 2018 before we get to 80%. We'll all be dead from pan flu anyway. So, we saw a photograph this morning of children in the 1950s with their sleeves rolled up waiting for Salk vaccine. There were no mandates in those days, and the enormous success of that program was based on fear of disease. So, and now we've got mandates for a lot of vaccine-preventable diseases, not influenza, except in New Jersey. Many of the diseases that we have these mandates for are not as perceived as severe as paralytic polio. I think with the data you presented and some similar data that's out there and little pushes for declinations and a bill that's in my legislature that we're working with the legislature on to mandate workers with the elderly to get influenza immunization, there's not going to be a lot of success unless we have some much more draconian, at least in the world of influenza, way of doing this that uses the model that's been so successful for childhood vaccines. And I would hope that what might come out of a session like that, like this today, is an attitude that while some of these tools may be helpful in inching things up, maybe we have to look more towards what's been successful in other vaccination programs.
That's a good point. It certainly would help our institution if there was a state law, because that would then, we wouldn't be having seen as infringing on worker rights or things like that. So if there was a state law, that would make a big difference.
My comment and question are sort of similar to his. We had a local hospital that tried to make a flu vaccine a requirement, and they did go to court with the nurses union and lost. And what they did was then to say, in order to protect our patients, everyone who doesn't get a flu vaccine will have to wear a mask all the time during flu season from October through May. And their rates went up to 95% of people who got flu vaccine. So my question, similar to his, is I've seen many presentations like this, and they're all focused on the defined needs of the population, the nurses, what those people need, and positive reinforcement. And my question is, it seems that negative reinforcement worked, having to have kind of a punishment of wearing masks all the time, which is inconvenient and uncomfortable, worked. And not at 10%, it worked at 65%. So, would you just comment about using negative reinforcement like the doctor was talking about? Let's use fear instead of protection.
Thank you.
Sure. I think it's great to hear some hospitals have achieved that. I think that one way things may change is in administrations, if this becomes an issue of litigation, where there's lawsuits for malpractice for nosocomial acquired infection, I think that may have a huge change on the landscape. I think it's an intriguing idea to require masks. I also wonder how the administration's in competitive times in nursing shortages and in personnel shortages, how that will be perceived. I'm interested in that kind of thing because of my infectious disease bent, but I've learned enough from the HR guys about the world they live in that I have to, it's not just the infectious disease world, it's also the HR. If you don't have staff, you can't keep your hospital going.
Morning, I'm Joellen Wilicki and I'm from Michigan, and those of us that have been around a long time realize the importance of an immunization champion in an office. So I'm wondering about the nurses that staff the carts. Were you able to tease out or get some sense of a difference in immunization rates within a unit if you had a nurse that was very proactive and went up to staff as opposed to a cart that just rolled through the unit?
There's clearly differences between units. We clearly found that. And why there may well be champion issues, we certainly had champions in the system as a whole. It's hard to pinpoint. There are certain hospitals that seem much more receptive to the carts than others. And things, the ENTs who ran those carts were assertive. And so it was no lack of assertiveness on their part. But the response they seem to get varied by institution. It's one of the things you learn is the culture of each institution differs.